If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Sherman. I'm your host. My guest today is John Tarnoff. John is an executive and career transition coach, speaker, and author who supports mid and late career professionals in defining, planning, and achieving more meaningful and sustainable careers. I think I need this guy. Fired 39% of the time during his 35 years as a film producer. Wow. Studio executive and tech entrepreneur, he learned how to turn setbacks into successes in a volatile business. He reinvented his own career at the age of 50, earning a master's degree in spiritual psychology to share his career lessons with others going through similar challenges. Since leaving entertainment in 2010, John has coached individuals, groups, and led career workshops for university alumni, including for UCLA, Cornell, Carnegie Mellon. Corporate coaching clients have included Bank of America, Bridgewater Associates, Levi Strauss, SoftBank, TD, Ameritrade, and Thrive Global. He's the author of the best-selling Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over 50, and has created four courses on the multi-generational workforce for LinkedIn Learning. Please help me welcome John Tarnoff. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ari. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. What's it? You're out where? You're in California?
I am in Los Angeles. Yeah. City of Angels.
City of Angels. Los Angeles. Yes, city of, that's true. That's true. Okay, great. Well, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling you what the right thing to do is, and they represent the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. Now, we all know that life is not a straight line. There are many ups and downs and many bumps in the road. People get hit with bricks all the time. The issue is trying to listen to the whispers before those bricks actually come, or listening to the whispers after the bricks come. Now, let me begin by asking you this. You spent 35 years in film production. I don't know if we're supposed to deduct the 39% of the time that you were fired, but let's not go there right now.
I kept working. I was fired, but I got right back up and kept on going.
There you go. Well, you know what? I'm sure many people in my audience would be very envious of your career. Let me ask you this. How did you break into film production? What was that career like? It must have been like really, really exciting, no?
It's very Tale of Two Cities. It's the best of careers. It's the worst of careers. You know, you're working with some really talented, smart, exciting, thought-provoking people, creating something out of nothing, right? You're working on large-scale, collaborative, industrial-sized projects. There is something very empowering and exhilarating about being in film production or TV production when it's working. The problem with the industry is that it's very hard to have a straight line with it. It's a very unpredictable world. You're trying to second guess the future taste of the American or the global public and what they're going to want to watch. And there's a great line from the amazing and talented screenwriter, the late William Goldman, who prefaced his book called Adventures in the Screen Trade, which is his memoir, with the line, "The first rule of Hollywood is no one knows anything." And it's true, because everyone's got an opinion, but no one really knows. So you're trying to kind of navigate in this very uncertain environment. Look, entertainment attracts very talented, wonderful people. It also attracts some schmucks and people who are in it for the greed, for the power, for the glamour. So, you know, you're trying to kind of wade through the muck a lot of the time to find the gold. And it can be exhausting to do that.
Myself, from my own curiosity, you were, I guess, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, hobnobbing with the stars.
You know, there's very little actual hobnobbing. You kind of are fed a diet of it on TV because you're watching all of the, you know, the awards shows, or you watch Entertainment Tonight or whatever. But, you know, most people just kind of have their normal lives, and they'll go out to restaurants, and the paparazzi shots of stars walking around going to the market, that's probably a better representation of what life is really like. It's just kind of life. Wow. And when you go to work, you work really hard, and it's not glamorous at all. Being on a film set is probably the least glamorous thing that you can imagine, where you're working long hours, 6 days a week with very little sleep, shooting on strange schedules, in strange locations, and it's strenuous work. You're either, you know, very, you know, into it and getting the scene done, or you're waiting around, or you're moving from one location to another. It's grueling.
Wow. So let me ask you this. You were, as you said, you were fired 39% of the time that you were working there. What were some of the bricks that you got hit with along the way? What was, sure. You know?
So the reason I talk about this 39% thing, and by the way, this came to me as I was preparing for a TEDx talk, which I did in 2012, which kind of launched me on this particular direction that I've been going on now for the last 10 years as a career coach. And I was trying to figure out, so what qualifies me to be up here talking about career transition and career reinvention, which was the topic of the talk. And I kind of did my little calculation. I kind of listed all the jobs that I'd had and what happened at the end of that job. And so six of the jobs, of the 18 jobs I had over the 35 years, six of them I left because I went on to another job, got another offer. Five of them were things that just ended. So films that I had produced that were done, consulting deals that were done, no harm, no foul. But then there were seven jobs where I was fired. And so I just did the math, and that came up to 39%. And I thought, that's a funny statistic, because who talks about the percentage of time in your career that you got fired? No one wants to talk about that. Right. You know, my mother used to say to me, why are you having such a hard time holding a job? Right, Jewish mother.
Lord.
And the truth of it is, it's a volatile business. And I wasn't fired necessarily because I was doing a bad job, but, you know, I was working at a studio. The studio had changed. The new guy came in, swept clean, wanted his own people in. You know, all sorts of reasons. And in some cases, sure, I clashed, you know, with the people, the person I was working with, or it just kind of wasn't working out. The last job I had was a really interesting story. I was working at DreamWorks Animation for most of the 2000s, doing really people work, not really production work. And they were changing directions. After the 2008 recession, the company decided it was going to change in a different direction, that they had, you know, different agendas in terms of their finances and how they were going to be profitable, et cetera. And a lot of the initiatives that I was working on were kind of, they were done. So I actually went, I initiated this. I went to the COO, who I reported to, and I said, look, this is a strange conversation to be having, but is there anything left for me to do around here? And she was kind of taken aback, and she kind of turned bright red, and she said, look, I have to preface this by saying you've been great. You know, you kind of took this department and kind of created this amazing thing with our staff and all that, and the programs that you've done. She said, but I have to be frank with you, the way we're going, I don't think so. And she said, look, why don't you, I mean, everyone loves you here. Go around, see if there's something that makes sense for you to do, that makes sense for someone else, some other project you can get involved in, department, initiative, and let's see if we can keep you on. And I did that, and there really wasn't anything. I really wanted to pursue this kind of education, staff development kind of role that I had taken on when I was there. So I came back to her. I said, you know, I think I got to go. And we negotiated this exit. It was very friendly, which is kind of unusual for Hollywood, where there's so many tempers and stuff goes on, fights break out. So, you know, it's all over the map as to why I left these jobs. But the point of it is, talking about the 39%, to kind of bring it back to this, is that getting fired is not fatal, right? You're going to recover from it. And the point of talking about 39% is that you want to realize that in a world that's changing so fast, you're not going to have the same stability in your job that you had if you were working 20, 40 years ago. So you have to adjust to this and realize it's about finding a better fit and using that as a springboard to really drill down on who you are, what's the value you provide, and come up with what I call a candidate-centric approach to taking control of your career.
Yeah, well, we know, you know, I spent the better part of my working career on Wall Street. And it's interesting. I've seen the metamorphosis of being employed. And, you know, it used to be in the old days, you got a good education. You went to work for IBM. You worked there for 40 years and you retired and it's game over.
That's right.
And if you had a lot of little jobs on your resume, it would be suspect. People would go, you know, why did you have so many different jobs today?
Job hopper.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Today, they want to know if you stay. Why did you stay at one company for 35 years? Couldn't you find another job?
That's true. That's true.
You know,
and I think this goes to the idea, and I got asked this question just yesterday by someone who said about their resume. So I'm concerned that I have all of these different jobs. And I said, look, there's a pattern to this, to your career. There's a pattern in these jobs. There's a portfolio that you are building. And what you want to do is look at each of the positions that you've had and figure out what did I learn in that position that helped me in the next one and the next one after that? And how do they all weave together to create this image of who you are, what you deliver, and how unique you are through the combination of all of these different jobs that you've done? And use it as a strength. Really redefine yourself through that synthesis as a uniquely qualified individual.
Let me ask you something. Are you married?
I am divorced, but I am 10 years into an amazing relationship with a wonderful woman.
Okay, so here's my next question. In that time period where, you know, during that 39%, did you ever get to a point where you were like so low that you just said, you know what? I give up. I can't do this anymore. To heck with my dreams. You know, I'm going to roll up into a ball and die. And, you know, and I don't care anymore. And if you did reach that point so low, the next question would be is how did you recover? How did you get out of it?
So I don't think I ever seriously got to the point where I was ready to hang it up, which is not to say that I didn't have low points. And I will, you know, in terms of the whispers and the bricks, I will give you a really perfect story, I think, for this. I had a startup, tech startup in the bubble, 1995 into 2001. Mm-hmm. April of 2001, the NASDAQ tanks. Everything starts to deteriorate. We in this company
I remember it very well.
Yeah. I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, most of our investors in this company were East Coasters, and they all of a sudden, three guys call us up and say, "We're coming out tomorrow. We got to get together. We got to, you know, cross everything off your calendar. We're coming out." So these guys came out and they basically said, "Look, you've got to reorganize. We've got to take another close look. Yes, you've got this big deal. We had this big telecom deal going on, this technology deal we were doing, which eventually went away because everything tanked after this. I mean, people were getting into fights. I mean, you remember this. So coming out of that, I thought, what am I going to do? It's now 2002. my partner and I have been trying to kind of keep this company going with toothpicks and spit. And we're kind of barely surviving. We've got some staff, we've got a sales guy, we've got some engineers. We're just kind of going job to job. It's not sustainable. And I come home one Friday afternoon, and I lived at that time in the Hollywood Hills, nice little house that I'd had since 1981. You know, got married in that house, raised my daughter in that house, and I'm out. We've got this cute little swimming pool in the backyard, and I'm raking leaves out of the pool on a Friday afternoon, and I slip and I fall into the pool, and I crack my leg on the way down on the side of the pool, and I haul myself out of the pool, and my ex-wife comes running and, you know, drags me into the car, takes me down to Cedar Sinai Hospital and patches me up. And the next day or so, I'm sitting in the living room, and I'm kind of staring at the ceiling. I got my leg up on the couch. I'm thinking, what's going on here? What is the message? And a voice says to me, I got the whisper, yeah, go back to school.
Wow.
Literally. And I thought, okay. And I realized in that moment, I thought, okay, this is right. I need to shift my perspective, because I wasn't going to go back to the jobs that I had working for the studios. I'd kind of like put that behind me. I didn't really, you know, keep up with a lot of these people. I wasn't interested in that work anymore, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. So the voice said, go back to school. So I decided to go back to this spiritual psychology program that I had known about, which was set up as a way for, in many cases, older professionals who were looking to pivot to careers in counseling to do this. But a lot of people I knew some people who graduated from this program, they went just because they needed a life change. They needed a refresher. They needed to kind of drill down on who they were, what their value was, where they should go. And this is how I got the DreamWorks job, because I changed my attitude about myself, about what I wanted to do, about how I presented to the world. And it was an invaluable experience. It was a pattern interrupt, right? It was a reset. And sometimes you need that reset. You need something to really take you out of the way you've always done it, right? Because it is likely wrong. If you keep doing it the same way over and over again, things change. You want to change with the way things are going. You want to upgrade yourself to the next level. So that's kind of a poster experience for career reinvention.
Wow. You know, it reminds me of when I used to, I had, you know, a group of people that were reporting to me, and it was like, you know, I'd ask a question like, you know, why are you doing it this way? You know, because to me, whatever they were doing didn't make sense, right? Whatever it was. And I said, why are you doing it this way? And you know what the answer is? I'm sure you do.
Because we've always done it this way.
This is the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
I go, do you know what the definition of insanity is? They go, what? I said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. That's insanity. Yeah. People, this is what you're doing. Okay. You're all insane.
That's right.
Right. I hear you. So, I hear. Let me ask you this. Who is the one person you would point to say that had the most influence in your life, and why?
You know, it's going to be a strange answer, but
I've heard a lot of strange answers to this question, so don't worry about it.
It's my daughter. I have a 29-year-old daughter.
It's not a strange answer. I like it.
Who is just a complete inspiration, who has been through her own trials and tribulations, as you might expect a young millennial growing up in today's world. But she has just demonstrated this quality of self-awareness, resilience, and a some kind of a willingness or an ability to understand her limits, understand how far she could go without going too far. And it has been, it's not easy for her necessarily. And she's done a lot of healing out of what happened between her mom and me. And she's done an amazing job. And I just have this tremendous gratitude for her and for the human being that she has become and is becoming.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. That's really, really amazing. Let me ask you something, and this is for my own personal knowledge. You've heard of Stephen Hill? He was an actor.
Sure, absolutely. Mission Impossible, Stephen Hill.
Yes,
absolutely.
Okay, my question to you is: A, did you ever meet him?
No.
Ah. No. Okay.
A little bit before my time.
Okay, interesting.
I got into the business a little bit later than that.
I find it interesting. He was an Orthodox Jew.
Yes. And they actually rearranged the production schedule on Mission Impossible to let him leave early on Friday to go to services.
Yeah. I always found that fascinating. Yep. And I think he had an effect on a lot of Orthodox Jews, because if he could make it in television, right? Why mm-hmm. not me? You know, and people were going, right. and people went on like that. So, I mean, I found it fascinating. I heard once, I never met him. He lived up in Muncie, New York. And I heard somebody once tell me that they had asked him about, you know, Hollywood and everything else. And he goes, stay away. Just stay away, you know?
Yeah.
And then I always think to myself, you know, it's always easy. It's always easy to say that when you've been there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But if you haven't been there, it's like, right. Yeah, stay away. Sure. Because just because you had a bad experience doesn't mean I'm going to have a bad experience.
And that's true. I think that the business has gotten a lot more. Normal, a lot friendlier, perhaps, a lot less clubbish than it used to be. And behavior, I think, is improving a little bit. I think you can't get away with being a screamer the way you used to. Stories of executives throwing telephones at assistants. And I mean, literally. That just doesn't happen anymore. And I think one of the great things about living in an age of increased transparency is that it's harder to get away with bad behavior, which is good.
Yeah. Although I will tell you that still exists on Wall Street, or at least it still existed 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's when I left. All right. Mm-hmm. I mean, guys mm-hmm. throwing telephones, breaking mm-hmm. screens, you know, getting yeah. all, you know, yeah. it happened. And
high stress. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think it's getting better. I mean, you still have people who are doing this and who is there some guy in the Biden administration just resigned, the science guy, because he apparently was toxic with people.
And, yeah.
A lot of complaints. And so
let me ask you this. If somebody came up to you today and said to you, John, you know, how do I get to Hollywood? How do I make it? What, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of advice would you give them, if any, or would you pull the Stephen Hill thing and go stay right. away?
No, I would say, look, for 10 years up until last year, I was co-running a graduate program in entertainment management in Los Angeles for Carnegie Mellon. And it's a great program. And it's for young people who want to be on the business side of entertainment across film, TV, music, and games, streaming, everything that it's becoming. And the truth of it is that there is a real business here. And if you are interested in being on the business side and you find the art and commerce, the intersection of art and commerce fascinating, which I certainly always did, mm-hmm. There is definitely a way through it, through school, through working your way up through the trainee programs and internship programs. And whether you're talking about being in on the business side or being on the creative side, you want to be really proactive about deciding what you like, what your orientation is. What are what are you interested in? Are you interested in comedy, interested in drama? You like sci-fi? You like, you like TV, you like movies, you like music, and build a team, build a network of people around you, peers, people who can be supportive, and work your way up. And it's definitely possible to do it. And you can build a great group of people around you and a great team and a great career.
Wow. All right. So then let me ask you this. Let's end with this. If people want to get in touch with you, whether they want career advice, whether they want coaching, whether they want, you know, just to schmooze, just to say, hey, I spoke to that guy. I know that guy. What would be the best way for people to do that? You have a website, email, yeah. What?
The two things I would suggest, the easiest thing is to find me on the website, which is, strangely enough, johntarnoff.com. So JohnTarnoff, as in Frank.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. There's a lot of information about my practice on career coaching on my LinkedIn site. So you just search for me on LinkedIn and it'll come up. And I guess I have the good luck to have an uncommon name. So there aren't too many John Tarnoffs out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, John, thanks so much for sharing your story with me and my audience. I wish you all the luck in the world going forward. I know you're doing a lot of good because you're helping a lot of people, you know, career changes and the like. You know, you get to be our age. And, you know, some people, they get stuck and they don't know where to go and who to turn to or whatnot. And you're filling a very, very needed void that needs to be plugged, basically. And you're taking care of that. And my hat's off to you. And I wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Ari. Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you for helping spread the message that the second act is possible. It is accessible. And there are ways of going out and doing it and claiming your sustainable future.
Thanks so much. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Schoenbrunn. Remember, if you feel like you're stuck in the mud, like you're spinning your wheels, wasting time in your career, your business, your life, if you know you're not enjoying all the success, satisfaction, significance that you desire, then it's time for you to book a call with me at callwithari.com. And check out my Whispers and Bricks Coaching Academy. And until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.